About 20 years ago, when I lived in Tame, the curate at St Mary's, the Anglican church there, commissioned the church banner making group to make a pair of banners to hang either side of the altar. Both had lovely, flowing, abstract patterns on. The one that hung on the left was in reds, oranges, and gold and had the word praise written along the bottom edge. And the one to hang on the right was in blues, purples, and greys and had the word lament along the bottom. I thought they were very lovely. When Tame Show came around, the church set up a stall there and the group responsible borrowed the banners to display. However, interestingly, someone felt the need to pin up the bottom edge of the second banner so that the word lament was hidden. The reading we just heard from Jeremiah is sometimes known as Jeremiah's lament. Some of the words in it might surprise us. The prophet says that God is like a deceitful brook, like waters that fail. Somehow these words have never made it into a hymn. I can't imagine why. It seems like a very raw, very real conversation with God. Jeremiah's words are a jumbled up mix of praise and anguish. He's holding nothing back. He's laying his pain and suffering, the burden of his calling, at God's feet. And we shouldn't be surprised, really. Many psalms and other passages of the Bible express pain, disappointment, anger, and betrayal, and some of it gets directed at God. I think that perhaps lament is a lost art in our culture, and maybe even more so in our churches. Somewhere along the way, we swallowed a lie that says that lament is the opposite of praise and that doubt is the opposite of faith. Jeremiah demonstrates that in fact, they're all bound up together. They're all very much part of a living faith, a faith that longs and struggles, a faith that questions and grows, a faith that engages with God, that's bold enough to make demands, that is sure enough in God's promise of love and grace to be completely and utterly honest. One of the Bible commentators I read says this: the opposite of faith is not anger, but indifference. For me, finding passages like this one in the Bible, passages that express the full range of human emotion, was transformative to my faith. They give us permission to communicate honestly with God. They teach us that it's okay not to be okay. And if you still need convincing, remember that Jesus himself wept and rebelled and cried out in anguish in the Garden of Gethsemane and on the cross. Remember his words, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" The three readings I chose from the lectionary for this morning are all quite different, but I think they all in different ways describe a living faith. A faith that's real and dynamic, practical and costly. A wholehearted faith. That wonderful passage from Paul's letter to the Romans reminds us that faith is a communal effort. It's lived out in community. Paul speaks about a deep solidarity with one another. Rejoice with those who are rejoicing. Weep with those who are weeping. And he goes much further, describing a love that extends to strangers, to enemies, to the lowliest and most despised or ignored members of society. I came across a quote this week that seems really pertinent to both of our New Testament readings. I hope you'll forgive that it's quite long, but I'd like to read it to you. It's from a book called God, Christ and Us by Herbert McCabe. He writes this: nobody nowadays thinks that Jesus was a political activist, concerned with political power, But the people who did have political power, the temple priesthood and the Roman colonial authorities, were very concerned about him. They knew that he was a threat. They had him crucified because he was a threat. Do not imagine that when the world sees how these Christians love one another, it will be lost in admiration. When it sees how these Christians love one another, the world usually goes for its gun. As Jesus promised, the world will hate you. I'm talking, of course, of the real love that expresses itself in action, not in inane cheerfulness or a feeling of benevolence. Of course, every society is some attempt by human beings to live together in friendship and cooperation, and to this extent is a good and God-given thing. The trouble is that we build friendship with some at the expense of others. The precarious stability of civilization as we know it would be profoundly threatened by a serious outbreak of love. In the context of a global pandemic, the idea of a serious outbreak of love is really something, isn't it? I guess what Herbert McCabe is saying, and those are quite tough words, but I guess what he's saying and what Jesus is also saying in our gospel reading is that the love we're called to is dangerous. It's a threat to the status quo. It demands that we go further than being nice people. It demands that we challenge the way things are. It demands that the church be a prophetic voice. I can't help thinking sometimes that the church is in decline and losing its relevance precisely because we've lost sight of this. We are not called to lead quiet lives.